I'm your host, Jeff Ragavan, and welcome to Alchemy, the podcast all about building a business on the front lines of the new economy.
Welcome back to this week's episode of Alchemy. Very excited. I have an old friend and partner on the show, Drew Stein. He's the co-founder and CEO at Autogen. Drew, super fun to have you on.
Jeff, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it, and it's so good to be together in this medium as well.
I know, Drew. I feel like you and I, for years, maybe probably at this point, 15 years is probably when I met you, but
yep.
I always seem to run into you at an airport or a foreign destination.
I think it's at least four times we've run into each other in an airport lounge somewhere.
It's kind of funny, you know, it's just like everybody, you kind of have things with different people. I feel like with you, it's always at the airport, which is very unique. But I'm even more excited to have you on the show just because, you know, we've recently partnered together doing some really fun stuff. So definitely wanted to talk about that today. But let's kind of dig into your background first. You know, you've been in the space now for what you were at 20 years. You were the founder at Station Media.
Yep.
So really focused on working with agencies and working in the music and the arts world. And, you know, you've had amazing success there. Maybe talk to us a little bit about the pivot to founding Autogen from the station.
Absolutely. I mean, the creative side was my first passion. And when I was 18 in college, my very first internship was at a music production company called Elias Arts. And it absolutely transformed me. I fell in love with the creative side of advertising, and it was really lucky to be able to do that at such a kind of young age. After that, I was able to really think about my career, what I wanted to do. I had a little stint on Wall Street, and I think the second I saved up enough, I was able to transition. I went from intern to COO. At Elias Arts, and the rest was history. We wound up LBOing the company. I took every last dollar I made, from that adventure in advertising and plowed it right back into starting my first creative company. And the first 10 years of my career was really focused on creating TV commercials and creating content for brands. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere around, you know, Facebook taking off and, you know, content across mobile, I saw a big shift, Jeff. And what I saw was the creative side going through really just disruptive change. We went from creative being kind of top of mind for everyone, the big idea, it was all about winning the Cannes Lions, to media, media, media. And the budgets became more challenged. And for us on the creative side of the business, we kind of had a front row seat to the digital revolution. And for some of us, that change was a challenge. And the challenge was to figure out, how do you stay relevant? How do you stay, really important to brands when everything became about measurement and data and media strategy versus winning that big creative idea? So I had to transition. I had to pivot in my own mind, because for me, it was about, how do you connect the dots? How do you take what you love on the creative side? Mm-hmm. But how could I learn something completely new on the digital side and the technology side to be able to add value in this new world of social media, of mobile content, and an ever-changing media landscape?
Awesome. Yeah. And I feel like, you know, we're kind of both in that, you know, data activation world and really utilizing, you know, audiences that haven't been tapped into. You know, obviously we kind of kicked off our partnership in the fall, and then, you know, Aaron and the team and you guys and Rosner, you know, we had this great kickoff party at CES, which sounded like a lot of fun. Wow. Talk to us a little bit more as far as the details of the partnership. Like, what type of customers, what are some of the results we're seeing right now?
Well, progressive audiences are hard to find. And when you think about what I'll call big data and the big data companies, there are a lot of similarities between the segmentation and taxonomy that they're building, right? There's only so many ways you can slice and dice financial audiences or health-related audiences or CPG audiences. And I think the market is craving something different. We all know we want to tap into progressive audiences. We know we want to tap into something different. The people who are willing to take the first step to, you know, be the innovators. And those audiences are very hard to come by. Everyone's got, let's say, mom audiences or auto audiences or high right. household income. But this is something that was truly unique. So from Audigent's perspective, when we thought about the partnership, here's something that truly no one else has in market. And we thought, a partnership just made complete sense because there's a massive demand for these kind of groundbreakers, out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of interesting, you know, kind of hearing from brands, hearing from agencies on these, you know, new data sources that we have, you know, for audiences, just because exactly what you were saying, it's like, you know, there's been audiences around for years, people are accessing the same people over and over. And what I constantly hear from these folks is like, you know what, here is our audience of, let's just say, an older generation of consumers who have been spending with us, but they're going away, they're aging, right? And we need to find younger audiences that are going to build with us for years. And I just had a really amazing call this morning with a luxury hotel brand. And they love this because they're like, we want spenders. We want first movers. We want these progressives that we know are going to be around for the next 40 to 50 years. And so it's interesting just to see everybody's play, especially, you know, obviously we kicked off with, you know, the progressive audiences were focused on cannabis, but, you know, it's not just cannabis, right? It's crypto, it's NFTs, it's this kind of new generation, of digital natives who not only have disposable income, you know, but are also very different from what they, you know, consumers used to be, right? Are there any verticals in particular that you guys are seeing right now that really kind of align with testing these new audiences?
Apparel, beauty, luxury, CPG, auto. I think there are actually a number of, and of course, financial services as well. There are a number of brands that we see gravitating towards, you know, these first mover audience, first mover audiences, these digital natives, as you shared. It's so funny. I think before Philo, you would just get this kind of request and it became very homogenized. We want millennials, right? And they use that as kind of this loaded word of trying to find what you really put your finger on in terms of the pulse. And that is these kind of risk takers, these influencers, and the people who are going to be first to try something new. And progressive audiences are in high demand. People want to find new consumers. Mm-hmm. They want to be able to speak to these audiences. And I think we finally have a way to help brands identify what it is they're really looking for when they use a blanket term like I'm looking for millennials, right? That's, mm-hmm. that's maybe what they say, but what they mean is that they're looking for these digital natives that are willing to take a risk or willing to try new things and try new brands and products. And I think your data sets tap into that in a way that is unique. And I think you speak to it in a way that no one in the marketplace has yet to really uncover. And we love that. And that's part of why we gravitated towards these data sets and why I think it's easy to have those conversations with brands. There's a lot of heads that just nod when you
right.
talk about these things. Oh, that, yes, I meant that. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Yeah. Those are the audiences.
Okay. I think, you know, what's really interesting too is, you know, since we've been doing this for the last few years and we've, you know, had a tremendous amount of experience with all sorts of different brands, right? Whether it's, you know, CPG, whether it's travel, whether it's food, et cetera. There's been so much like movement that we've seen since COVID, especially in the cannabis sector. Like, I don't know if you remember, but when COVID was first happening, you know, cannabis was deemed essential across most of the country, except a few states. And that was something that we had never seen, right? Like you couldn't get a haircut during COVID, but you can buy weed. I mean,
right.
that was like,
right.
Wait, what? This is insane. And so, you know, with that, COVID for us was kind of this major push. And then obviously, you know, adding in tons and tons of partner data and layering it, we have this entire profile, this, you know, unique user that no one's been able to access before. But I think one thing that keeps coming up over and over, and I'm sure you guys hear this too, is like, what happens in the future when cookies go away, right? And I think, you know, looking at what you guys do, obviously, you know, your data engine, you know, captures and monetizes, you know, premium first and second party data. You know, what exactly do you guys, you know, think the future of audience targeting will look like as we kind of move towards that cookie-less future? I know you guys are doing things, we're doing things. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are actually left in the dirt. You know what I mean?
Well, you know, from our perspective, Hadron ID has been, you know, for sure our focus. We've invested a ton in it. We've led, you know, the industry in coding and releasing the first cookie-less header bidder for pre-bid. Our CTO now chairs the European pre-bid committee. We've partnered with Amazon as being one of their key cookie-less technologies for their header bidder technology and in TAM, and we're excited about that. But at the core of why I think Hadron is gaining traction is because we're planting flag for the future. We know that cookies are deprecating, maids, IP address, a lot of those deterministic identifiers will be harder to come by. And at the same time, we want to make sure that whatever we do next as an ecosystem champions consumer privacy. We believe the future is a combination of probabilistic and deterministic identity. And we believe that the point of impression needs to be separated from the point of measurement. At the point of impression, we think there's a very robust future around cohort-based targeting, which is far more privacy-centric. We believe that contextual targeting is getting more and more sophisticated. And we believe what's next after contextual around cognitive audiences or predictive audience data, which is also cookie-less, also device-less, and consumer-friendly, is a new frontier. What I like about these audiences is they are terrific seed sets for thinking about predictive audience data as well that can be actioned against contextual sites and mobile apps. And so we're excited about these data sets that you have, because we think that for the future, they model really well and they can be extended across a lot of different contextual touch points. And so for us, that's where we've put all of our big bets, and the partners that we are working with today are partners we think really will be here for the long haul because their data sets lend themselves so well to that future where contextual and cognitive or predictive audience data are going to play such a significant part of targeting going forward.
Cool. And so, you know, anything that you're particularly really excited about or any programs that you guys have activated, you know, with Philo data that you're like, whoa.
Well, I could tell you, I mean, we're using them in a bunch of music and entertainment activations right now that we think are going really well. We're driving exceptional performance around e-commerce, especially for some of our entertainment and music partners. And we're seeing the results when you're running e-commerce campaigns. And we saw it at the end of the year, certainly around the holidays, when you're running ROAS-based campaigns, you have to find the right audiences and you have to find audiences that take action. There's no hiding when you're running performance-based campaigns. And we like the way these audiences performed when we were layering them on these e-commerce deals. And they frankly outperformed when layered on versus not having them.
So when you're, you just mentioned, ROI. So when you're, focusing on these audiences, like what attributes do, high ROI audiences typically, possess?
I mean, it certainly starts with engagement. And then you have to find audiences that are willing to spend at the end of the day, right? You can have an audience that's engaged, but you can't, for the life of you, retarget or get to move down funnel. I think what's different is when you use, these are not just audiences that are willing to engage, but they're audiences that are willing to spend. And there's a big difference, right? It's not someone who just likes the shiny new toy, but it's someone who's actually willing to throw down the money and spend, and you can move them down funnel. And that's what, what I think ultimately drives ROI. It's not just finding audiences that may like the products or services that you have, but audiences that are actually you know, have the wherewithal to go all the way down to conversion. And that's something that we saw when we layered these audiences into those campaigns.
Yeah. When it comes to custom audiences and audiences that really are super targeted, like think about you and I, like you and I both share one very common passion, right? What is it?
Fishing.
Fishing, right? We love to fish all around the world, but also obviously we both have a place out in the Hamptons. But, you know, I don't know about you, but I get targeted for everything under the sun, whether it's boat dealerships, fishing rods, fishing tackle, fishing this, fishing that. And I buy every fucking thing I see.
Everything.
Like, literally. I get that on Instagram. I'm like, oh, I need that. I don't have that. And so it's like, well, I try to explain to my friends who are not in the business that are like data privacy and I don't want to share my data and all this stuff. It's like, guys, by getting targeted in a very, you know, granular fashion, you're getting the ads that make sense for you and you're eliminating all the garbage, right? And so that's how we kind of look at our data sets too, where it's just like, hey, if you can target people that are so segmented, you're making it easier for the customer to also get what they need, right? And I use that example all the time, right, with the phishing stuff, because it's just like, I love getting targeted on ads that I need. They're things that I want, you know? What I don't like is when I get targeted for something that's completely irrelevant, right? And that was kind of like why we originally launched the Philo Data Marketplace. When we first launched in this world and we were focusing on these cannabis companies, we didn't have data. And so we were trying to figure out, like, how do we, this is 3.5 years ago, right? How do we drive people into dispensaries in legal states? We were like geofencing. Data didn't exist.
Yep.
There was no data. It's not like we could call Axiom and say, hey, give us credit card transaction data on what people were buying in dispensaries. It still doesn't exist. And so we had to launch our own data marketplace, right? Our own actual ecosystem of what people are buying. And, you know, that obviously came down into thousands of different segments, you know? So I think, yeah, obviously being able to target people, you know, in a smart fashion is the future, right?
I couldn't agree more. And when you put an ad in front of someone that they genuinely, you know, engage with, that they actually want the product and there's utility there, you're doing them a favor and they appreciate it. I, you know, like you, love fishing. I am an apparel hound. I love buying every pullover, every hoodie, you name it. I, you know, every hat, you name it, I want it. And so I'm thrilled when I get targeted for those ads. I know Facebook for sure has figured out my number. And, you know, I, my wife now jokes with me. She asked me whether I buy everything that I see. And I say pretty darn close to it, but they definitely have, you know, have it down. And so, yeah, when I think the goal of what we do, of course, is to really connect with people at the end of the day. We're not here. And I think one of the things when we think about the privacy conversation, we want to be able to engage with people on a level that they're comfortable with when it comes to consumer protection. But if we go completely the other way and you just are randomly getting ads and we're not able to take advantage of some of the things that frankly make the internet and the experience of consuming content better, right, we lose something. And so I, for one, am a consumer that I do not mind being targeted. In fact, I prefer to, you know, accept all cookies, and I prefer to be targeted with advertising versus completely, you know, getting some kind of random ad.
I'm with you. Same here. So definitely looking forward to, you know, our partnership this year. I think as we kind of close out this show, I wanted to ask you a bunch of very simple, quick fire questions. Yep. Okay. So let's get everybody who's listening to know you a little better. So obviously everybody knows that you and I both love to fish.
Yep.
But what's your favorite fish to catch?
Fluke. Mm. And I love to do, I do fluke two ways. I do fluke with a little sesame oil and sriracha. And yes. Then I do it just with lemon and a little bit of sea salt. And when I serve that up, everyone just goes crazy. So is my favorite of all the fish. And those are the two ways that people love me to serve it.
I know, like a fluke carpaccio or a fluke crudo, everybody loves it. But I'm with you, actually. I mean, striped bass is probably my favorite to catch, but fluke comes in pretty close as well.
Yeah, That's the big crowd pleaser. And if I want some fun, I'm going out, to the ruins and trying to catch some, some blues or some stripers. Always fun trying to hook up there.
I still cannot believe the size of that bass you caught ruins that year, because I've been fishing there. I don't go there anymore because it's just, honestly, it's lame. And all the seals are there now. So it's like,
yes, all the seals are there.
There's not a lot of fish up. But when you showed me that, I was just like, and I would fish that spot at sunset in June.
Yeah.
You know, just kind of like, working plugs like you did, no dice.
Yeah. It's much harder for striper, but if you just want to hook up with some blues and have some fun.
Oh, yeah. No, blues are like all summer on the tide changes. But yeah. I've got a few fluke spots off Block Island.
Yeah.
We'll share with you. We'll fish together next
time. Amazing. I'll tell you another little secret of why I like fishing there. I always make it the last spot on the way home. Because I am a hound for the sunset over Gardner's Bay.
It's so beautiful. And
I will literally, we call it chasing sunsets. And we'll fish there as the last spot of the day and just literally park in the middle of Gardner's and just bob up and down watching the sunset. And that's part of why I still love fishing there and always make it my last spot.
Love it. Favorite destination?
Favorite destination is Captiva Island. It got hit pretty hard in Ian, and things are going to change there. But Captiva has been a really special place for my family. And continues to have a really special place in my heart.
Favorite thing that you're watching on TV right now?
I watched, You People last night, and that was a lot of fun on Netflix. That was a great ride. The new Eddie Murphy movie and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. That's good. Of course, I'm watching Yellowstone like everybody else.
I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, it's so good. It's really, it really just sucks you right in. And those are the things I'm watching right now that I love.
Have you seen Glass Onion?
I have not seen it. We just finished White Lotus and we absolutely loved White Lotus. Yeah. And we are about to start Glass Onion.
But do you watch White Lotus the last season or the first season?
Both. We watched first and second season and we just absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
And now we are going to watch Glass Onion.
Yeah, no, it's really good. All right, last question, Drew. What are you most excited about in 2023?
For us, it's the continuing evolution of our partnerships on the, on the SSP side. We are moving towards real-time data calls, and which will allow us to partner with SSPs in a way to really take advantage of our entire data stack. We've got a couple early adapters where we are literally parking our servers, co-locating our servers in the data centers with our SSP partners. It allows us to make real-time data calls and be a part of the bid stream with our partners' data sets in a way unlike ever before. So what's most exciting for us in 2023 are real-time data integrations, allowing us to take advantage of all of our contextual and audience data stack and our Hadron identity in a way that we previously haven't been able to achieve before. So that's a pretty nerdy answer, but that is what I'm most excited about this year.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. Awesome. Well, listen, I'm looking forward to the summer, and I think we definitely need to do an industry fishing thing. I know we wanted to do that last summer, but there's enough people out here that we can get something going.
Fantastic. And I'm in.
I have to take Rosner too, although I don't know if he can fish.
I don't know that he can fish, but he brings the Levan cookies with him, so he's a great guest to have anywhere you go.
We need someone to bring food on the boat. Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to that. And, Drew, I really appreciate you coming on. And of course, appreciate the partnership. You guys are amazing. And looking forward to a great year ahead. So Drew Stein, co-founder and CEO of Autogen, thanks again for coming on.
Terrific being together, Jeff. And thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure.
This episode of the Alchemy Podcast was brought to you by Philo. Thanks for tuning in, and if you enjoyed today's show, don't forget to subscribe and share.